Long-term investors need a roadmap to this, in this brave new world. And to help us put that map together, we welcome now to Wall Street Week, Bob Prince, co-chief investment officer of Bridgewater Associates. Welcome. It's great to have you here, Bob.
Thank you, Dave. It's good to be here.
So you're concerned about inflation, I think it's fair to say. You think we have inflation and it's here to stay. Give us where you think we are in inflation and what should be done about it.
Well, yeah, we think that inflation pressures are building, not fading. You know, the assumption of the markets and the central banks and so forth was that this was sort of a one-off, you know, idiosyncratic issue. But what's really happening now, you see increasing evidence every day that, that demand is outstripping supply in a number of areas. Labor markets, wage rates are up. The statistics the other day were that there are 11 million job openings in the United States and aren't even that many unemployed people. So you've got a supply-demand issue in wages, energy and raw materials. You've got low inventories. You've got supply-demand pressures in housing. And when you look at just the CPI, 30% of the CPI is housing. It's either actual and imputed rents. And that's it's lagging the rise in home prices. So that more is coming there. So there are pressures are building for inflation. And a big part of that is that there's a tremendous amount of inertia in the economy from the what we refer to as MP3 policies that were just referred to in your segment, which I think would be good to go into. And I think the net of it is that the current policy posture is not sustainable for long.
So let's pick up specifically on MP3 and the dramatic growth. I mean, it's been quite extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And yet, I don't think it's been reflected in the level of inflation you normally expect, given how much more money there is in the system.
Well, look, maybe I could explain what I mean by MP3. It's sort of a buzzword,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, we're mechanics. We try to understand the economy and the markets is like a machine. And so the causal linkages of them at that machine and sort of what would be the next shoe to drop, basically. And MP1, or monetary policy one, is an interest rate-driven monetary policy. That's what we're all used to. MP2 is a QE-driven policy, which was, you know, post-financial crisis. Those are both fully spent. You can't the interest rate policy works if you can cut interest rates, but you got to move them by 300 to 500 basis points to have an effect. And the way that interest rate policy works is that you change interest rates, you change demand, and then that changes people's income because spending drives income. But the goal is income, right? When you go to MP3 is fiscal policy supported by monetary policy. It's the government borrowing money, the central bank printing money, buying the bonds, and then the government piping that money into the economy. And what's really important to understand about that MP3 is that the causal linkages are reversed relative to normal monetary policy because whereas typically income is at the tail end of that process, it's at the front end of the process. In other words, you're inflating people's incomes by just simply putting money in their pockets. It's not earned income, but it's income. It's spendable. And if you look back at last summer, last year when we had the strongest policies, only about a third of that money got spent. A third of it went into debt reduction, and a third went into assets. So there's a tremendous reserve of liquidity out there that continues to come out of bank accounts and spend. And that money was basically inflating nominal incomes. The other side of MP3 is that the central bank suppresses the rise in interest rates.
Right.
And otherwise, you're pushing the accelerator with one foot and hitting the brake with the other. So that puts you in a situation from an investment standpoint where nominal cash flows and nominal income and nominal spending are very high and interest rates are very low. And there's a really fat spread between those. And like Larry Summers said there, that spread is the fattest since the 1960s and 70s. The only question then is how much of that nominal spending turns into inflation versus real growth. But for investors, it's cash flow. And so that's been a lot of what's been behind the rise in the markets.
So underlying all this, as I understand what you're saying, is a fundamental mismatch of supply and demand. And that's true with money and goods and services and labor and everything else. I'm assuming that that cannot continue forever. Something has to bring that back into alignment somehow. If you're an investor, how do you prepare for that world? Because that suggests that the world 3 years from now may not look like the world we see today.
The thing that brings that back into equilibrium is the tightening of monetary policy. We no longer have the ability to cut interest rates. We got plenty of ability to raise interest rates. And so, you know, we're getting closer and closer to that day. And then the question is, you know, how much of an interest rate increase and when? It'll be sooner than what's discounted, probably a lot bigger. If you look back historically at how much of an interest rate increase it takes to slow down an economy, it's like 300, 400 basis points. Wow. And that's in normal times when, and we have abnormal times because so much wealth has been created. It's nominal wealth. It may not be real wealth, but so much wealth and so much money is sitting in bank accounts that there's a lot of potential spending out there just sitting in bank accounts and sitting in assets.
Well, take me into that world. As you say, nominal wealth has been created. I mean, asset values have been increased, yeah, without a doubt. When in a world where you go up 300, 400 basis points, you take some of that value out of those assets. For an investor, where do you go to make sure that you don't get burned by that? Do you go offshore? Do you go to Asia? Do you go to China? Where do you go?
Well, I think, first of all, you want inflation hedge assets, because it's very likely that the rise in interest rates will lag inflation and lag the economy. The Fed doesn't really want to get ahead of it. Someday they might have to, but the first move up in interest rates is a rise in inflation, is interest rates are dragged higher by the economy, and that doesn't shut things down. It just sort of resets the levels of everything. So first of all, inflation assets. And second, all of the things we're describing about the United States and Europe, they're not true for Asia. Mm. And the, you know, we tend to have a very West-centric view of investing. And yet, the economic output of what I refer to as an Asia bloc, which is China plus a number of countries that are trade very closely together, the contribution of those that area to global growth is 2.5 times the contribution of the U.S. and Europe in terms of growth rates. If you look at the sizes of the cash flows, the size of credit outstanding, it's equal. And so I like to think in terms of balancing a portfolio between East and West. And of course, nobody's really even close to that.
Okay, to be unfair to you, I'm going to ask a really hard question, but we only have a short time to answer it. Are we looking at a Volcker moment?
No, because if you have to have a Paul Volcker to get a Volcker moment. Paul Volcker was a rare person and a great person. But 20 years of inflation accumulation, serious pressure on the dollar, serious question of the dollar as a reserve currency, and he stepped in to change the tide. We're at the beginning of a potential problem, and so we've got probably a few central bank heads before we get to that.
Got a little bit of time. Thank you so much, Bob.
All right,
really
David.
Great to have you with us. That is Bob Prince of Bridgewater Associates.